In a study of marriage and divorce, definition of terms is critical. And so we've been looking at the term marriage and what a marriage is biblically. The way people define marriage in our society is not the same way the Bible defines it. And as a result, that leads to some very serious and wrong conclusions. The same is with this word that we're looking at tonight, the word divorce. The definition you might find in a dictionary, or the definition that people might have in their minds when they use the word, may not be what the Bible means when it talks about divorce. So if we want to understand God, we need to understand what He meant by the words that the Holy Spirit caused the writers or speakers to use. And that's our study tonight. So we've been talking about a marriage being a relationship between a man and a woman that's entered into by covenant and consummated in sexual union. The word divorce, very simply, is the severance of that relationship. Let's begin our study tonight in Deuteronomy 24 and verse 3. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 3. We're not looking at Deuteronomy 24 as the law of marriage for today, but as a definition of words, how words were used. And we're doing it by contextual usage, looking at phrases around our words to see what the context indicates the meaning to be. So in Deuteronomy 24:3, if her latter husband turns against her and writes her a certificate of divorce. So, what does a certificate do?
Certified.
It certifies what happened. If a child at school gets a certificate of perfect attendance, it certifies what happened. What if they don't get the certificate? Does that mean they did not attend? No. The certificate is not the action. And if they do not have a certificate, it does not invalidate the fact that the child attended. The same is true with the act of divorce. Someone might say, they're not divorced because they don't have papers. The papers would only serve to ratify or validate or certify what happened. But the lack of the papers doesn't change the fact of what happened. Now, he said it's a certificate of divorce. Well, what is divorce? What phrase in the context of verses 1 through 3 indicates what action that refers to? What happened? Sends her out of the house. You'll see in verse 1, he sends her, he writes her a certificate of divorce, and sends her out from his house. She leaves his house and goes, becomes another man's. There's our phrase that's used as synonymous for the relationship marriage. Becomes another man's wife. If the latter husband turns against her and writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house. Note verse 4, her former husband who sent her away. So a marriage is a relationship where people come together. He leaves, father and mother, cleaves to the wife. She's given by the parents, taken by the husband. They become one another's. We looked at that when we studied the term marriage. Now, the divorce is saying, I'm not yours anymore, or you're not mine anymore. We will not be companions anymore. We will not share life together anymore. And so he sends her away from his house. So that covenant that they made to be companions in this relationship has been severed. the English Standard Version, instead of send her out of house, says she depart. And the New English Translation says he evicts her. Whichever version you use, you can see that the term divorce refers to the severance of the relationship, not the papers. The papers just certify. Some years ago, there was an article in the, I believe it was the Houston paper, where the Jewish men, at the time this article came out, wanting to be cruel to their wives, would divorce them but not give them a certificate of divorce until years later, after childbearing age. It was purely an act of meanness. But the fact is, they had divorced the woman, but they didn't have the paper to show that they were divorced. That was the purpose of this certificate. It didn't change the fact of it. All right. Matthew 5, 31 and 32. What would be today, by the way, the equivalent of a certificate of divorce? Something like it. Civil papers. Nothing in Matthew, in Deuteronomy 24 about civil courts at all, is there? No. Who writes that certificate? The husband. How does she get it? He gives it to her. Nothing about judges, nothing about going to the gates. He writes her certificate, puts it in her hand. She can show to the next man, look, I'm divorced. Because a woman couldn't have two husbands. So that was the idea. Now look at Matthew 5, 31 and 32. It was said, whoever, this is the New American Standard Version, whoever sends his wife away. The King James Version says, shall put away his wife. Whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. Now, right there in that one verse, you have the word divorce defined. It is sending the wife away. Note, down in verse 32, but I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, now verse 31 says send his wife away. Verse 32 says divorces his wife. If you're reading the New American Standard Version, there's a little footnote by the word divorce. And over in the margin, it'll say, or sends away. Why the translators use sends away in one verse and divorce in another verse, I don't know, when it's the same word. But anyway, that's what they did. So, then he says, whoever divorces his wife except at the cause of unchastity and makes her commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman, a put-away woman, a sent-away woman, a woman who's been severed from the marriage relationship. That's the idea. All right. First Corinthians chapter 7. If you have any comments now, feel free to speak up. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. You can see what we're doing. We're just turning to passages that anybody with whatever version, the King James, the New King James, the New American Standard, any of these versions, you can turn to them and say, look, here's the word, here's how it's used contextually. You don't have to have a lexicon. You don't have to know Greek. You can just look at the context and see what the word means. All right, here we are in 1 Corinthians 7. As you know, chapter 7 is about marriage. He's answering their letter, verse 1, concerning the things which you wrote. When you get to verse 10, he says, to the married, I give instructions, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, let her remain unmarried. So we ask the question, if a partner in a marriage relationship severs the relationship, what is their state? Unmarried. Now here's what you'll hear. First of all, let me ask you, did she have the right to do that? What did Jesus say in Matthew 19? No. Here's the question. Are they still married in God's eyes? No. They're not married. Period. The relationship severed. So I said, well, they're unmarried, but they're still married in God's eyes. No, they're not still married in God's eyes. They're not married. They're not in that relationship anymore. This is important because what happens if people view them as still married, somewhere down the road, they're separated now. One of them commits adultery. So I'm going to put them away for adultery. You can't put somebody away if you're not married to them. If your boss fires you, can you quit? No. There's no relationship. And so it says, when she leaves, let her remain unmarried. Oh, but wait a minute. Maybe we're mistaken because it says she's to be reconciled to her husband. How can she be unmarried and still have a husband? How can she?
Past relationship.
Past relationship. Remember, we talked about that. Well, we talked about Joseph and Mary. That husband and wife do not, that those terms used of a man and a woman do not prove an intact relationship. It can refer, those terms can refer to a man and woman who are currently in that relationship. It can talk about a man and woman who were in that relationship, like this verse. Like the case of Uriah, Bathsheba, or an anticipated relationship. We talked about that in Deuteronomy, for example. We also saw that in Joseph and Mary, called husband and wife. But even until the very point Jesus is born, what's their relationship called?
Engagement
or betrothal. They're not married. So we can't put a stake in the ground and say, well, they're married because he called her husband. No, it's not the case. We need to understand that. You say, well, that's sure strange language. No, it isn't. At a funeral, if you walk by the casket and there's the mate of that person laying in the casket, and you walk up and say, what relationship are you to that person? What might they say? That's my husband. That's my wife. Well, it's not anymore. You mean that was my husband or my wife? Okay, so need to understand that. Now, look at last part of verse 11. So, in the first part of verse 11, what does the woman do? What's the phrase that the Holy Spirit uses?
Leave.
In the last part of the verse, describing the husband's similar action, what phrase is used?
Divorce.
The last part of verse 11?
No.
Send her away, isn't it? Unless a different version.
I have divorce.
What version do you have? Okay, well, that must be the difference in the... This is the 77 edition. You must have the 95. It's got divorced?
It
must not divorce his wife?
Yeah.
Good, okay, well, good. This version says not send his wife away. But if it has divorce, you see that divorce and leave are used synonymously.
It has a footnote that says leave also.
It does? Okay, good. All right, so... Same thing in verse 12. To the rest I say, not the Lord, if any brother has a wife who's an unbeliever, she consists to live with him, let her not send him away. End of verse 13. Let her not send her husband away. All of this serves to confirm that the word divorce is the severance of that covenant relationship to be one another's. That's what it is. To be one another's companion, to live together, to share life together. It's a severance of that covenant and thus of that relationship. Okay. We've answered the second part of number 3. What phrase in the text describes how this relationship is severed? She leaves, separates from, ESV says. Okay. Let's look at Matthew 1. Matthew chapter 1. Verse 18, the birth of Jesus was as follows. When his mother Mary had been betrothed, this is the 77 edition of the NSB that I'm reading, had been betrothed to Joseph before they came together. What does that mean?
Consummation.
Huh? Consummation of the relationship. Look at verse 20. Take Mary as your wife. Verse 24, he took her as his wife, but what they didn't do, verse 25, he kept her as a virgin. See? So before they came together, she was found to be with child of the Holy Spirit. So before they came together, his wife is pregnant. It's not just simply talking about living in the same house. Your wife don't get pregnant by living in the same house. So before they came together, she's found to be pregnant. And so Joseph, being a righteous man, not wanting to disgrace her, desired to. This is the same word that's translated divorce in your Bible. Put her away. Is it possible for them to use the same word with a different connotation? Is it?
Yes.
Certainly, we do. Do we not? Words are what?
Vehicles
on which thoughts travel. And there may be more than one passenger on the bus. The word itself just means to loose or to sever whatever you're talking about. Marriage is not inherent in this word that they used. And so, he was going to put her away. We talked about this when we studied Joseph and Mary. That this word is, and you can go back and look at that lesson. It's used of releasing a person from prison, setting a person free from a debt, those kind of things. And so he was going to put her away, not from a marriage relationship, but from a covenant to be married, the idea. Now, one reason I want to use this verse is that they were thinking about severing this relationship they had, this engagement. But had it happened yet?
No.
Thinking about it, planning to do it, is not the same thing as doing it. Same is true with divorce of a marriage. People can be married and think about divorcing, plan to divorce, but not be divorced. The divorce is the severing of the relationship. It's not talking about it. It's not thinking about it. This is going to be critical further down the road when we talk about various positions, because there's a position held among brethren that can be labeled mental divorce. In other words, you divorced me, but I didn't accept it in my mind, therefore I'm not divorced. Now, brethren sometimes will deny holding that view, but that's exactly what it is. Divorce is not just something in the mind. Divorce is something you do. You sever a relationship. So defining these words at the beginning of our study on marriage and divorce can help us on down the road when we start meeting various positions that brethren advocate on this particular topic, or not only those who are not brethren, but just religious writers. All right, number five. We've talked about this one already, so you don't have to turn there. Deuteronomy 24. This was a Jewish practice instituted under the law. A man was to give his wife a document. The text says, in her hand, he gave it to her. No courts, no going to the gates. That's where their courts were held oftentimes. And certifying, he severed the marriage relationship. Now look at, and so this was a Jewish practice. Okay? When you read Deuteronomy 24, it does not imply that men were not already putting away their wives. But now the law is give her a certificate. Remember that God planned for this nation to continue to multiply, and these women could then go be another man's wife and bear children. But be that as it may, look at Mark 10:12. And in the Jewish society, do you recall any verse about a Jewish woman divorcing her husband? I know of none. Neither, not in the Old Testament, not in the New. Jewish women did not divorce. They did not initiate this severance. Men, the Jewish men did. Now, in Mark 10, however, Mark seems to have the Roman reader in view. That's a whole different study. We talked about that. We talked about the Synoptic Gospels in a class, I don't know, several years ago. But in Mark chapter 10 and verse 12, if she herself divorces her husband and marries another man, anything about a certificate? Nothing about it. So a Roman woman might sever the relationship. That certificate, she may never give him anything. Except, here's your shirt, get out of here. So you can see that when you read Deuteronomy 24, this certificate thing becomes an important factor in talking with people. If I don't have a certificate, I wasn't really divorced. Yes, you were divorced. With or without a certificate. How? The relationship was severed. All right. So what happens, and these are real case scenarios. A woman says, I'm not living with you anymore, for example. And she doesn't. Say for a year. Are you divorced? No, I'm not divorced. We didn't go to the court. We didn't file any papers. Well, what is it if it's not divorce? What do you call it? We'll talk about separation in just a moment. It's not the separation of 1 Corinthians 7:5. Okay? This is a very important point, number six, and you'll see that later on in our study when we talk about views that are taught and held. This is important. Divorce requires only the will of one mate. Now, what are the two requisites to a marriage?
Covenant.
A covenant, sexual consummation. So, in a covenant, for a covenant to be broken, violated, how many of the parties has to violate it?
One.
Look at the verses that we have here on your lesson. Look at Genesis chapter 21. These have nothing to do with marriage. We spent one entire class talking about the term covenant. What a covenant is. It's an agreement between two people, which may or may not have a vow connected with it. But it's an agreement to do or not do something. All right, Genesis 21:27. Abraham took sheep and oxen, gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant, an agreement. And so, verse 30, you shall take these seven ewe lambs from my hand in order that it may be a witness to me that I dug this well. Therefore, he called that place Beersheba, because there the two of them took an oath. So they made a covenant. So in this case, there was an oath involved, which served as an assurance to the other party. You remember, Hebrews says God took an oath, not because God needed to take an oath to make his word valid, but for the assurance of those who would benefit from, give them assurance. But nevertheless, here's a covenant. So, if Abimelech came and watered his sheep at the well and maybe destroyed the well, is the covenant broken? Is it?
Yes.
What's hard about that?
Yes.
Yes. Whether Abraham agrees or doesn't agree, or vice versa. Two to make a covenant, only takes one to break it. We can see that, can't we? Look at Jeremiah 34. Again, we're simply letting context help us with these words and what they mean. Chapter 34 and verse 8 of Jeremiah. The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord after King Zedekiah had made a covenant with all the people who were in Jerusalem to proclaim release to them, that each man should set free his male servant and each man his female servant. Now note verse 8, made a covenant to set them free. Okay? And so, verse 10, all the officials and all the people obeyed who had entered into the covenant that each man should be free, his male servant and each man his female servant. But look at verse 11. But afterward, they turned around and took back the male servants and the female servants whom they had set free, put them in subjection. How many parties agreed to the change of action? Two? The people agreed to be servants again?
Oh, you're talking about coming back.
Yeah.
No, one.
One. There's a covenant, involves two people, but one side violated the covenant. You can pretty confidently affirm that the other covenant, the other part of that covenant, said, I don't agree with that. I don't want to come back as a slave. Make it whether you want to or not, whether you recognize it or not, that's what's going to happen. So when a divorce takes place, one party may not want it. They may not agree. They don't like it. But it's still a divorce. Okay? Because the covenant has been broken. Look at Malachi chapter 2. Malachi chapter 2. What does the Lord indict these priests for? About how they treated their wives. What does he call it? Treacherously. What does treacherous mean?
Violation of trust.
So here's a covenant you entered. You violated your covenant. You dealt treacherously against your wife. So, he says, I hate divorce. So we got these other verses here under 6b, Deuteronomy 24, Matthew 5, 1 Corinthians 7. Is there any indication that the consent was required before one party to the marriage could sever the relationship? No. No. And this happens all the time, doesn't it? People divorce their mate, not by the mate's consent, not because they want it, But they don't have any choice. The other person has broken the covenant, and thus the relationship built on that covenant. Okay. Here's a question. Is it possible to be legally married while biblically divorced? And explain your answer. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Explain the answer, Craig.
Well, you could be divorced. You could do the action, send away, put away. But you could still not have taken care of the legal papers.
That's right. And that happens. People quit living together as husband and wife. They divorce, biblically. But they're not divorced legally because they've not been to the courthouse and filed the appropriate papers for the courts to recognize the divorce. This is why it's so important that we define words as they were used biblically versus words as we use them today. And we illustrated that in sermon after sermon, class after class on other words like the word baptism, the word church, etc. That we define words as the writer or the speaker use them rather than as how we use them today. So important when we talk about this word divorce. All right, look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Okay, now chapter 7 is all about marriage and divorce. So, he encourages a man and a woman to take care of the conjugal duties of the marriage in verse 3 and 4. When he says, when he describes this relationship in verse 2, how does he describe the relationship between the man and the woman in verse 2? That's marriage. What, instead of the word marriage, what does he say? What phrase do you use? Have their own. Have their own. There we're back to leave, cleave, give, take, become one another. Have their own. All right, so, verse 4, the wife does not have authority over her own body. Why? Because it belongs to him. That is the authority to keep herself from her husband. The right. The husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Why? Because he belongs to her. The idea. He had the power to do so. He didn't have the right to do so. So when you get to verse 5, New American Standard translates it, stop depriving. The King James, I believe in the American Standard, says defraud not. And the word defraud has to do with withholding that which rightfully belongs to someone. It's a good word. It's that way. We use it way in James chapter 5. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again. So here's a separation. Because he says, come together again. So there's a separation where the normal conjugal relationship is not being practiced between the man and the woman. And so we've got on your lesson, what distinguishes this separation from what we've been reading about divorce? There's two things.
It's temporary.
What?
It's temporary.
Temporary. For a time. What else?
An agreement.
It's an agreement. Now, divorce can be by agreement, but sometimes divorces are not by agreement, and an agreement is not requisite to a divorce. What he's talking about here, consent is a requisite of this. By consent, they both agree for a time. Why? I don't know. It says for prayer. Why do you have to be apart for prayer? I don't know. I don't live in Corinth. I don't know what their culture's practices were. What I do know is that he made an allowance for a man and a woman to temporarily, by consent, hold the normal relationship of marriage at bay for the purpose, as he said, of devoting yourself to prayer. Maybe prayer by synecdoche, apart from the whole, is put for some kind of religious devotion, and prayer is put for the whole thing. I don't know. Anybody know? I don't know. But for some kind of special devotion. And that was agreed. So that's a separation contextually, and it's different from a divorce. All right. Now, when you read these verses, if you have, most of all of you have, maybe not all of you, have a digital version of the Bible. And on your digital version, you're able to pull up several versions at one time and scroll them together. That's very helpful. Like on mine, I'll have the New American Standard 77, the New American Standard 95, the King James, the New King James, the American Standard, Young's Literal, and the English Standard Version. And I can scroll all of those at the same time and compare versions. Let me ask you this, besides the class we're doing and studying for understanding, what other value is there in doing that? I said, I don't know. If you're studying with someone, very possibly they're going to be using a different version than you do. Isn't that true? Would it be helpful for you as a teacher to have prepared by, oh, if they've got the New King James, it's this way. Or if they've got the English Standard Version, it's this way. Yes, it takes time. It takes time to get prepared to teach. But it may help you be better prepared when you discuss these topics or other topics with people. And so comparing versions can be valuable. Rocky?
I have a question about divorce. Let's say a husband and wife have hated a heated argument, and they divorce, and one or either one of them or the wife said, I'm going to divorce you. You're no longer going to be my husband or my wife, whichever one starts the conversation. But then the next day, they make up. I said, well, I really didn't mean what I said. And no further action is taken to move the divorce along. Can you comment on that? I guess the question is, are they divorced because they said something and didn't carry it through? Or how far along do you go before...
If they severed the relationship, they were divorced. Now, just saying it, that's why I did with Joseph. Saying I'm going to divorce you, thinking about it, is not the doing of it. Joseph intended to put Mary away. But he was stopped. So maybe the fella gets mad or she gets mad. Say, I'm going to divorce you tomorrow. I want you to get your stuff out of here. We're through. But at night they talk or cool off and they don't sever their relationship. So because one or the other said it, does not mean it happened. Now how long do they have to be apart for the thing to be thing? I don't know the answer to that. I just know if the covenant is broken and the relationship is severed, they're divorced. Can divorced people decide to start living together again? What verse would you go to? We read it tonight. 1 Corinthians 7:10, 10 and 11. If she leaves, let her remain unmarried or what? Be reconciled to her husband. You don't want that to happen. You don't want those kind of scars on your marriage. The things we do sometimes in marriage or fail to do leave scars, and a scar can heal, but it's still there. The mean words, the nasty words, the bitter statements, that's still there. and you may be forgiven, but the scar's there. And the book of Proverbs talks about rash speech is like a sword, and a sword leaves a scar. And so in the heat of anger, we do things that are so foolish and that we regret later, but it's done. And that's why we need to control our anger and our wrath. Thank you for your good attention and your comments tonight. Our time is up.